Hello and welcome to the Waterways Ireland podcast, a new series with me, Turtle Bunbury, in which I'm exploring the rich history of Ireland's waterways. In the last episode, the first part of this spiritual journey double bill, I spoke of how many of Ireland's early monastic schools and missionary training centres were built along our waterways, places like Clonmacnoise on the Shannon and Old Loughlin on the Barrow. And it made sense to build schools on a waterway. Accessibility and education often go hand in hand. But during this era, the early medieval period, as some call it, there were also a lot of Christians who didn't want to be accessible. On the contrary, they wanted to be completely inaccessible. Step forth, the hermits. These were people who wanted to have a closer relationship with God by living in complete isolation. And thus you end up with these guys who are living a life of seclusion and meditation in a beehive hut on the jagged edges of some utterly forbidding place like Skellig Michael, the island that it's about 7 miles off the coast of County Kerry. If you're a Star Wars fan, you might recall it's also where Luke Skywalker went to be a hermit following the destruction of the New Jedi Order by nasty old Kylo Ren. Other early Irish hermits preferred to live on islands off the coast of, say, Connemara or Donegal, the sort of place where your best pal's going to be a puffin, and there's unlikely to be a whole lot of interruption from other humans. Although I have seen it argued that actually these hermits weren't quite so isolated and reclusive as we might think. Maybe there were a lot more neighbours back in the day. Friendly neighbours, but their houses have just vanished over time. They might have lived in clusters. Communities of hermits, if that is not a total oxymoron. But some hermits really did live on their own, doing penance by living in the most inhospitable place they could find. And hats off to those who did. I mean, puffins are cute, but that's a hard, hard life. To be in a place like Skellig Michael during a 9th century hurricane, with the icy cold ocean tearing strips off the rocks all around you? Not for me, sir. Nope. If I was to be reincarnated as a 9th century monk, I'd follow the lead of those wise men and women who turned away from the turbulent ocean in favour of Ireland's inland waterways. In fact, I'd head for a lake. I'd find a nice woody island, where I'm still going to be pretty cut off from the distractions of everyday society, but at least I can get a decent night's sleep because the climate is, well, a little more benign than it is on an island in the Atlantic Ocean. The islands on the lakes of Ireland became very popular places of retreat for hermits and indeed for monks and certain nuns during the golden age of Irish Christianity. There were monasteries on at least 103 islands around Ireland. Now, half of those were on sea islands out on the coast, like the ones I've just mentioned. But the other half were island monasteries in inland waters. And more than half of those 51 island monasteries in inland waters were established in what we presently know as Northern Ireland. Loch Earn in County Fermanagh was especially popular. The German historian Annette Kennel, who is a big authority on this topic, she referred to Loch Earn as an Eldorado for monks. And in the Eldorado of Loch Earn, Annette Kennel has counted 12 separate monastic island communities scattered around Upper and Lower Loch Earn. Annette also pointed out that all the islands on Loch Earn would have been much smaller in those days because the loch was lowered by 8 feet or 2.5 metres in 1884 to sort out the drainage issues. So the islands all grew. Boa Island, which we've spoken about before, actually became a peninsula when they drained it. Likewise, there are monasteries at Rossory and Inishkeen on what is now the lake shore of Loch Earn, but way back 1,000 years ago, these would have been island monasteries too. You have to keep bearing in mind the slow but steady change in the shape of our landscape. The heyday of those 12 island monasteries on Loch Earn was a time when the lake itself would have been a busy highway, a way to get from, say, Ballyshannon, the mouth of the River Earn, over on the west coast of Ireland, deep into the heart of the country, as the Vikings would later discover to their immense pleasure. I think the Atlantic is actually only 4 or 5 hours from Loch Earn if you row at a healthy pace. But the River Earn also, of course, offered a way out of the country if you could follow it to the estuary at Ballyshannon, from where you could bring a boat south to, say, get a view of Croagh-Patrick in County Mayo, or go and see your in-laws in Galway. With all this traffic to-ing and fro-ing along Loch Earn, some, if not most, of those 12 island monasteries would have been kind of medieval hostels, places where travellers and pilgrims could stay on their journey, get a bite to eat, say a few prayers, bank some more time in heaven by handing over a few coins to the head monk. Maybe he'll show you the ankle bone of some martyred saint as a trade-off. And hopefully, at the end of it all, you'll also get a good night's sleep. That tradition of offering hospitality to travellers and pilgrims was certainly going on at Devenish Island, which was one of the most important monasteries in Ulster for almost 1,000 years. Devenish is a wonderful place to visit. I've been out a couple of times on the MV Kestrel from Enniskillen, a lovely journey up the River Earn, and they give you a half an hour or so to wander around the island before the boat about turns for Enniskillen, which is fine, but longer works too. There's lots to see. The first monastery on Devenish Island was apparently founded about 1,500 years ago, the 6th century, by a saint called Molisha. Some call him Lashrane. And you can see his oratory on the island. His followers produced a gospel book, the surviving parts of which are securely kept at the National Museum in Dublin. And then, about 5 centuries after the age of Molisha, the Augustinian monks came and built a newer, flashier priory on the same site. That was standard practice with monasteries across Ireland. Newcomers arrive, they improve the existing setup, they make it bigger with all new mod cons, like the fabulous round tower they built on Devenish Island. It's 81 foot high and you can clamber up the steps to its conical roof, and that gives you an amazing view of the gorgeous, fertile green countryside all around for many miles and miles. And actually, there's a lot of other things to see on the island. Some of it was built relatively recently, like only 600 years ago. There's a 13th century temple, for instance, built by the Maguire kings of Fermanagh. As I say, Devenish is just one of a dozen spiritual retreats on Loch Earn. Another gem is White Island on Lower Loch Earn, where there's a wee Romanesque church built about 800 years ago with a wonderful panel of much, much older stone figures. And we spoke about nearby Boa Island and its very old stone figures in an earlier episode. Spinning down from Loch Earn to the River Shannon, 1,000 years ago, there was an extraordinary cluster of monasteries in the Shannon estuary and right up the river, including the great ecclesiastical schools of Clonmacnoise and Clonfert. The biggie at the mouth of the Shannon is Scattery Island, or Inishcahie, where Senon, the patron saint of County Clare, founded a monastery back in 534 AD. And more power to Saint Senon, because he rid the Shannon of its monster. You might not know the Shannon had a monster, but Inishcahie means the island of Caha, and Caha was apparently a most fearsome creature with a horse's mane and gleaming eyes, thick feet, whatever that means, nails of iron, and a whale's tail, a sort of maritime Gruffalo. Anyway, Senon defeated the brute and founded his monastery in celebration. And you can still see that settlement today, as in the remains of his oratory and his house and 7 chapels and a round tower 120 feet high, one of the tallest in Ireland. Come on up the Shannon to the Tipperary Clare border and you reach Inishlosky, an island where monks from Montpellier in the south of France founded a church, but they had to scoot because of rising waters and flooding from the Shannon, which has clearly been an ongoing problem along the river since time began. And then we get to Loch Derg. It's always a little confusing when we talk of Loch Derg in Ireland because there's two of them. There's one Loch Derg on the Shannon, and then there's another Loch Derg up in Donegal, the one that's famous for its pilgrimages and St. Patrick's Purgatory. The Loch Derg on the Shannon, it's the biggest lake on the river, it had plenty of holy things going on too, including three island monasteries. The most famous of those three is Holy Island or Inishcaltra, take your pick. It means, in Irish, Island of the Burials, and if you pop into the Saint's graveyard on the island, you'll quickly see why. Nothing but graves. Again, I should add that the landscape is not quite what it once was. When they built the power station at Ardna Crusher on the Shannon in the 1920s, the water level in Loch Derg rose so that Holy Island would actually have been somewhat bigger when, say, the Nobel laureate William Butler Yeats wrote about the island in his ballad The Pilgrim. The first recorded inhabitant of Holy Island, which is, well, it's 50 acres of a fertile 50-acre island, its first inhabitant was a hermit named Macrish, or Macrica, who was living there in 555 AD, sustaining himself, it is said, upon a honey-like juice that he drew from a tree which possessed the headiness of wine. And, well, lucky him. Now, I know that hermits like Macrica didn't necessarily just pray and meditate and bathe their bunions and smoke fish all day, or drink wine from trees, for that matter. They were often pretty smart, these hermits, or anchorites is probably a more applicable word in the case of Macrica. They were very well read. They were people who other people admired for their brains, for engineering and maths and things. And maybe you're trying to repair a road or build a new bridge and you hear of an anchorite called Fintan who's good at geometry. You give him some alms, maybe he'll help you out. In any event, Macrica was clearly onto something because by the 7th century, there were not one but two monasteries on the island of Inishcaltra. One was founded by St. Columb in the 6th century, t'other by St. Quivin in the 7th century. Quivin, he was a Benedictine monk, and he may have been inspired to succeed due to a bad case of sibling rivalry. I say that because, according to the annals of the Four Masters, his mother had 77 children. That seems like an awful lot of children for one mother to have. Maybe some of them were adopted, or maybe it's complete mythology. Who knows? In any event, Quivin turned his monastery into a celebrated scholastic institution, one of those great centres of learning and art that we talked of before. Among those who reputedly studied here was St. Dunna. And one day, Dunna decided to leave Inishcaltra to go on a pilgrimage to see the apostles' tombs in Rome. And he decided to call at a town called Fiesole, north of Florence, during that long and arduous journey. As chance would have it, he arrived in Fiesole just as its citizens were about to elect a new bishop. And when Dunna strolled into the cathedral, the bells began to ring and the lamps and the candles burst into light. And it was all so magical that the citizens, they put two and two together and figured that Dunna was a pretty spiritual dude, so they elected him their bishop. So, well done to Dunna, but mind you, given that the citizens had just drowned their previous bishop, it's possible that demand for the job wasn't that high. Dunna remained their bishop for over half a century, and he became an advisor to one of Charlemagne's grandsons. And, well, Dunna, or Donatus, remains one of the most revered saints in Tuscany, and you'll find his name in numerous churches and place names throughout that region. Now, you might scoff and say, what baloney, and I don't know, were these people real? Did Dunna exist? Did the saints exist? I don't know, but we're told that they did. And In any event, the point is that something was happening in all of these places, these monasteries, be they small island retreats or the big monastic schools. The people of Ireland used to believe in nothing but pagan gods, but by the 7th, 8th, 9th centuries, you'd be hard-pushed to meet an Irishman or Irishwoman who didn't say their bedtime prayers to anyone except the Christian God. And the wonderful thing about these places is that, well, all the world's a stage, but sometimes nobody takes all the props and the scenery away. So again, on Holy Island, we can still see a very well-preserved round tower, an anchorite cell, a holy well, and the ruins of 6 churches. This was the stage on which the monks once strutted and fretted in the time of Donna of Faisal and such like. These island monasteries were also found up the Shannon on Loch Ree and Loch Key. On Loch Key, the best known are on Holy Trinity Island and Church Island. Inchmacneran Abbey on Church Island was supposedly founded in the 6th century by Columba, St. Columbkill, the patron saint of Derry, who was one of those guys who brought Christianity to the Scots. Or in Loch Ree, where there are apparently 52 islands round and about, some little more than an acre big, some over 200 acres, I imagine the feet of monks trod upon each and every one of those 52 islands in times past. But in terms of what's known, Inchmore, the largest island on the lake, and Inchboffin both trace their monastic heritage to 5th century hermits. Inchboffin's hermit was called Ree, and there is an outside chance that Loch Ree is named for him. Staying on that lake, Inchcleron, also called Quaker Island, is home to the ruins of a substantial monastic school founded by Diarmaid the Just in 560 AD. St. Kieran, who was the sort of headmaster of Clonmacnoise, he's credited with founding the monasteries on Hare Island and Saints Island, both again on Loch Ree. Not so very long ago, I spent a night on Loch Ree, on a boat, listening to the sounds of the water splashing against the hull. It became pretty stormy for a while, but then there was complete peace, total silence, and in the morning there was nothing, only the bleat of a distant sheep and the cry of a gull scooting along the wind-rippled waters. It's a haven for marsh birds. You can see widgeon and lapwings and swans and herons and egrets. I saw a very content egret rain-bathing. It wasn't exactly sunbathing weather. Rain-bathing on one of the shallow bedmarkers and buoys in those serene waters. And it was joyous, just quietly gliding by those lovely islands. And you can see why those early hermits and churchmen and churchwomen embraced a place like Loch Ree with its relatively tame isolation, and how they would have favoured it as a place for their ascetic retreat. The island monasteries had their heyday in the 7th, 8th, 9th centuries before the Vikings came in strong, but they would bounce back from those attacks, and in a future episode I'll talk of how the Christian church had a reboot under orders like the Augustinians and the Cistercians and so on before that tyrant of a king, Henry VIII, closed down the whole shebang in the 1540s. But for now, I hope this episode and the last one have helped you to see how Ireland's waterways played such a crucial role in the age when the beacon of light shone from Gaelic Ireland, a beacon that would keep Christianity lit during the strange centuries that followed the fall of the Roman Empire in Europe. Rome, of course, would retain its interest in Ireland through Roman Catholicism, food for another day. Thank you for listening to this Waterways Ireland podcast, and I hope you're enjoying the history. Over the next few episodes, we're actually going to take a break from the history, and I'm going to be speaking with some contemporary souls who are working or living on the Irish waters today, including the Shannon, the Barrow, and the Grand Canal. In the meantime, I shall finish this episode with a verse from The Pilgrim, the poem I mentioned earlier by William Butler Yeats. Round Loch Derg's holy island I went upon the stones. I prayed at all the stations upon my marrow bones. And there I found an old man, and though I prayed all day, and that old man beside me, nothing would he say. But fol-de-rol-de-rol-e-o. Thank you for tuning in, and you can hear plenty more episodes by searching Waterways Ireland on Spotify, Apple, Google, or whichever platform you use. You'll find all you need to know about Irish waterways at waterwaysireland.org, or my archive of historical tales, mostly Irish, at turtlebunbury.com. My sincere thanks again to series producer Ali Bunbury and to technical producer Liam Mulvaney of 11 for 10 Productions, who also composed the beautiful music you're listening to.